Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today, we open our show with a special report on a contentious hearing of the El Cajon City Council over a proposal for the city's police to cooperate with federal immigration authorities at a time when the Trump administration is rolling out mass deportations. Then, hear about the 11 people who have applied to fill a vacancy on the Lemon Grove City Council. On Destination East County, hear about festive February events coming up across San Diego's inland region, including a Judy Collins concert in El Cajon, a stage production of Romeo and Juliet in Borrego Springs, romantic Valentine's teas in Julian, a Black History celebration in Lemon Grove, the Boots and Bow Ties Awards dinner for the East County Chamber at Sequan, Fido Fest in Santee, and Hawk Watch in Ramona. We'll also have some national news stories from Public News Service, including the administration shutting down the agency handling U.S. aid overseas, an action Democrats say is illegal without congressional consent, plus news on the end of diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives by the federal government, insurance issues, a federal push toward school choice, and more. Then on Crime Beat, hear about the arrest of a sheriff's deputy for excessive force that seriously injured a man awaiting trial at a San Diego courthouse, the proposed release of a sexually violent predator in Julian, and an El Cajon woman arrested for allegedly sending drug-laced mail into a women's detention facility in Santee. From California News Service, hear a report on President Donald Trump's water policies for California, including what critics have to say. Supervisor Jim Desmond is running for Congress and will have details. President Trump has blocked flights for refugees, including Afghans who helped our military. Campuses across California are gearing up for ICE raids at public schools, and we'll have a report from California News Service on this. The Metropolitan Transit Service has expanded its trolley services on nights and weekends, including many new options for East County transit riders. And finally, we'll take you on the road to the Desert View Tower in Hacumba Hot Springs, one of San Diego County's quirkiest and most beloved roadside attractions. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. El Cajon's City Council held a contentious hearing on January 28th over a resolution introduced by Mayor Bill Wells. It aimed to authorize El Cajon police to fully comply with federal immigration enforcement officials in handing over undocumented immigrants for deportation within the limits of state law and the Constitution for the stated purpose of removing violent criminals. Repeated studies have shown that immigrants commit crimes at far lower rates than citizens. Under California's SB 54 law, local cities and police can already hand over undocumented immigrants convicted of serious felonies, such as rape or murder. Others can be held accountable through the criminal justice system, and if found guilty of serious crimes, could then be eligible for deportation. But the Trump administration seeks to go further. The hearing came on the same day that the White House press secretary indicated that the Trump administration now views all undocumented immigrants as criminals, even though crossing the border itself is a misdemeanor on the first offense, not a felony or a violent crime. Emotions ran high during the hearing, where supporters and opponents packed the chamber, some carrying protest signs. 88 members of the public testified, followed by a heated council debate that divided the all-Republican members in a hearing that ran over 5 hours. Sweeps by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, have begun nationwide, picking up many immigrants, including some with no criminal record. Councilmember Michelle Mitchell spoke of an El Cajon man arrested by ICE in front of his 5-year-old daughter, even though he had no criminal record other than being undocumented, she said. Mitchell made clear that she wants to see violent criminals removed, but she could not support the resolution after several dozen speakers voiced fears of authorities targeting people with brown skin and having to carry citizenship papers to avoid being sent to detention. Carlos Gomez, a Fallujah veteran who came here as an undocumented immigrant, had this to say.
I got to El Cajon in 1992 after running across the border, jumping the fence, dodging vehicles and to ensure I didn't get hit. That made me, I was 9. Now I stand in front of you as a 42-year-old man who's a Fallujah veteran with a Silver Star recipient, which is the third highest Medal of Valor that anyone in the service can receive. That puts me as an immigrant, but has done more for this country and sacrificed more for this country and bled for this country than most individuals in this room. You smirk, you laugh. You want to say we take your jobs? Yes, I did take a job. A job that some of you guys weren't willing to take, or even your sons weren't willing to take. I have fought terrorists. I fought insurgents. I've been shot twice. I never considered I had to come back home, had to fight you guys to ensure that we were being protected. I know what it feels like to be behind, be in handcuffs, behind the migra, because I was undocumented at that time. So the whole fact about having ICE working in the police department is not just for kids. You say you want to deport criminals. Cool. That's fine. But how many criminals are in fifth grade classrooms? Not many.
Dr. Joanna Veneveres, daughter of an immigrant, also opposed the resolution. She spoke about her family's experiences with racial profiling.
I'm Dr. Joanna Rose Benavides. I stand before you as a voice for the voiceless. As a retired USAF veteran, business owner, a corporation in San Diego, licensed health care provider, and a daughter of a Mexican immigrant, I oppose ICE working with local law enforcement because I know firsthand how power can be abused. At age 8, I witnessed a police officer threaten my father's life due to his brown skin. Why must American citizens prove our right to exist here? I had to tell my U.S. Army veteran and Mexican mestizo Native American Indian father to carry around his birth certificate because of potential deportation due to misguided profiling. I had to tell my mother to carry her naturalization papers. Why do I have to carry around my own birth certificate? I was born here. I served in the military here. By involving local police in ICE activities, you're shattering the trust between community and law enforcement. We're already scared to call the cops. Now we're definitely not going to. Fear is a powerful tool, but it comes at a price. It erodes the community's foundation. It will turn neighbor against neighbor. And is this the legacy you want to leave? Look into the eyes of your constituents. We're not asking for special treatment. We're just asking to be treated with dignity like every human being deserves. And true leadership isn't about following the whims of the powerful, the wealthy, or the loud. It's about standing up for what's right, even when it's difficult. Today, I wear this victory pin worn in the 1940s to signify victory over the Nazi regime. My grandfather was a World War II POW. Depending on today's outcome, I'll either keep this pin on or take it off. Because if you allow this to happen in this city, that victory over fascism was never truly achieved.
Melissa Ortiz Baldwin appealed to the council members' Christian values in urging them to protect vulnerable immigrants.
As a follower of Christ, I believe the Bible speaks to this matter more effectively than I ever could, and should matter to all those, especially on the city council right now, who claim to be Christ followers. Exodus 23:9, do not oppress the foreigner. Leviticus 19:33 and 34, when a foreigner resides among you in your land, do not mistreat them. The foreigner residing among you must be treated as your native born. Love them as yourself. Romans 12:13, extend hospitality to strangers. Matthew 25:35 and 40, I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. Truly, I say to you, whatever you did for the least of these, you did to me. Finally, as a reminder, Christ himself was forced to flee Israel as a child with his parents to escape violence. We can be thankful that they were not required to wait for visa or asylum applications to be processed before they could leave the dangers they faced in their home country and find safety in Egypt.
Sam Halpert spoke of the value that immigrants contribute to America and called for comprehensive immigration reform instead of policies that incite fear.
We are the wealthiest nation in the world. A nation built by immigrants, described on the Statue of Liberty as huddled masses yearning to be free. One of our freedoms includes freedoms from jackboots at the door. Why do we rush to intimidate and frighten people just want to be part of the American dream. We need an immigration policy, but one that can offer a way to that dream. Intimidation and fear are not the way. Thank you.
Speakers against the resolution included representatives of immigrant rights and nonprofit groups. Some threatened legal action if immigrants are harmed as a result of the council's action. Others gave examples of how the resolution proposed was already striking fear into immigrant community members. Mejgan Afshan, executive director of Borderlands for Equity, serves many immigrants and refugees in East County. She told the council that children are scared of going to school for fear of losing their parents after the Trump administration authorized ICE agents to enter schools, churches, and hospitals. While some speakers voiced fear over authorizing police to cooperate with federal immigration authorities, saying this could lead to police providing information that could lead to arrests of people with no criminal record or even detention of citizens without papers, others urged the council to support the measure, voicing concern for public safety. Though opponents outnumbered supporters, both sides did draw large turnouts. The hearing was boisterous, with the audience frequently interjecting applause or jeers and the mayor threatening several times to clear the room if the audience wouldn't quiet down. Corbin Sabal spoke in favor of the resolution and suggested anyone opposed to it must support rapists and murderers.
You then, as a council, have a decision to make. You can either cooperate with that and help them, say, okay, we'll help you deport rapists and murderers and criminals and thieves, or we'll prevent you from doing that. Those are your two decisions that you can make as a council. So the conclusion that I'm coming to is that if you don't pass this resolution, that's telling me that you don't want to deport rapists and murderers and thieves. If you are not supporting of this resolution, that means you are telling me that you are in favor of rapists and murderers and thieves staying in this community and endangering everybody else. That's the only possible conclusion that you can come to.
Ann Joseph also urged the council to adopt the resolution, giving a specific example of a murder near her home that she said was committed by a person who was not here legally.
This is not a race issue. It's not really about immigration. Around the time that the Welcome Center was established, just a few blocks from my house, bringing Haitians, Chinese, and other unknown ethnic groups from who knows where, I saw 3 buses per day, and even in the night, tour buses that would hold 60 people coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. My council people knew nothing or didn't let on. There were 2 murders at that time in my neighborhood, only blocks away from my house. One was a Vietnamese lady who loved to exercise in the park, was stabbed to death by someone who was not here legally. Another one was a man just half a block away who was shot to death. And that's the kind of result that I would like to see removed from my neighborhood and all of our neighborhoods.
Republican Amy Reichardt with Reform San Diego voiced anger at nonprofit leaders who help migrants, accusing them of profiting off illegal immigration. She also issued a veiled threat to any council member who might vote against the resolution, stating, "The only people who should be afraid are the people who vote against this. There will be ramifications." Reichardt also drew laughter at her comment about Jesus' immigration status.
And yes, Jesus did seek asylum, legal asylum. But you know what? Did not break laws.
Go ahead and stop for a second. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll just wait. Wait till you can control yourself. Okay.
One of the final speakers was Bud Collins, who has worked with council members on homeless outreach and said he believes they all love El Cajon. He urged the council to pray and asked, "What would the Lord have you do?" He then cited a Bible verse, urging council members to love your neighbor as yourself. A vigorous council debate followed public testimony, in which the mayor acknowledged was the most contentious council meeting ever. Councilmember Mitchell led off by denouncing hate and making clear she supported not becoming a sanctuary city, but neither committing to a path to support federal actions that instill fear across many community members and could result in deportations of people with no criminal record, like her neighbor, ripped apart from his 5-year-old daughter.
The drug addicts, criminals, trying to gain entry into people's homes. That is our biggest problem in this community. That is more of a public safety issue than the illegal single father raising his 5-year-old daughter on his own, who was arrested this past weekend down by Mollison Avenue, down the street from my house. They went to his house, asked the lady that he lives with, are you an illegal? She didn't know his rights, didn't know her rights. She said yes. They went in and took him out in front of his five-year-old daughter. Imagine, all of us have children. Imagine that trauma of her father being taken away because he was an illegal. But he works a full-time job, lives in an apartment, and had a court date to become legal. Imagine, again, the trauma his little girl went through watching this. Now, I know that my children and my grandchildren would be horrified if they had to watch this. His only crime was coming over the border. He had not committed a crime, but because he's a low-hanging fruit, he was arrested. Because he and others are easy to find and arrest, and so the numbers go up fast.
Councilmember Mitchell acknowledged,
this could be a political thing, and this is the end of my political career. I don't care. I don't care, because I stand up for the people here.
To some who had spoken in favor of deporting all immigrants, she had this to say.
The man who is working his job and his only crime is crossing the border is a criminal? You're wrong.
Let's go down the line. Let's go down the line. I'm just going to go down the line. Okay, all right. Go ahead.
Councilman Gary Kendrick talked about his mother, who was born in Czechoslovakia. In 1939, with Hitler in power, her best friend and her friend's family disappeared, as well as her boss, who was Jewish.
The Gestapo came in and took him away, and they never saw him again.
Kendrick's mother later married a U.S. soldier and came to the United States. The family often vacationed in Mexico, but when Kendrick was 12, he recalled a checkpoint officer in Mexico saw her European-style smallpox vaccination on her arm and asked for her passport. Then he recalls.
The U.S. Border Patrol person said, oh, where are you from? Where? And she says, well, you know, we live in Santee in California. He says, well, where were you born? She goes, well, Brno, Czechoslovakia. He goes, do you have your passport? And she says, no, you know, I don't carry my passport because we used to go to Mexico all the time and buy bread and papayas and everything. And he started interrogating her, asked her a lot of questions, and I was scared out of my mind. And I wanted to say, but she's my mom, you know, she's been here forever. But I kept quiet because I was so afraid. And that sticks with me today because that would have been around 1966. So that's over 50 years, and I'm still traumatized by it. So I can imagine how our immigrant friends are traumatized, whether documented or undocumented.
Kendrick warned that if El Cajon were to pass a resolution pledging to fully comply with federal immigration orders, it would be a blank check, since the Trump administration policies keep changing. And he warned,
I think it's crucial that our police officers have trust of the entire community, no matter who they are, no matter what color they are or what religion they are. And if they lose that trust, we're less safe because they're not going to be witnesses. They're not going to hiding when they see a police officer. They're not going to report crimes. And all of us suffer from that.
Councilman Kendrick noted that El Cajon has 70 ethnic groups who get along remarkably well, in his words. He said he had no intention of tearing the fabric of the community apart. Kendrick and Metchel then introduced an alternative resolution that praised the contributions of immigrants and declared intent for the city to follow state law, as all other local cities are already doing. But Councilman Phil Ortiz, whose district is predominantly Latino and Middle Eastern immigrants, and whose grandmother came here as a pregnant immigrant, objected. He said,
it's the only difference between America and every other country. It's our rules and our laws that makes it different. And Americans' commitments to embrace those laws. That's what makes it unique.
Then Ortiz cited a World Health Organization estimate that there are 2.5 million people worldwide living in poverty, adding,
We cannot use immigration as a way to alleviate world poverty. You can't bring 2.53 billion people in here.
Councilman Ortiz voiced support for the resolution and for deporting criminals.
We can't just turn a blind eye to these criminals that are here. That is immoral and it's unethical.
He further stated that he does not see any issue with El Cajon police calling ICE on people who came here across the border. Councilman Steve Goebel sought to find a middle ground, asking numerous questions and introducing several alternative proposals that failed to win adequate support for adoption. Mayor Wells made his position clear.
The one phrase that, to my mind, is a non-negotiable is that the city of El Cajon states its intent to cooperate with the federal government.
Wells also noted that the majority of El Cajon residents voted for President Trump. Councilman Goebel observed that state law limits what the city can do and noted that the city's police needs to address other issues, such as homelessness. He concluded,
We can't really do much other than just stay out of the way and let the feds do what they want to do.
In the end, the mayor's resolution failed on a narrow 3-2 vote, with council members Kendrick, Mitchell, and Goebel opposed, while Mayor Wells and Councilmember Ortiz voted in support. The issue is not over, however. East County Magazine has learned that the mayor is hoping to bring the matter before the council again and hopes to change Councilman Goebel's mind, perhaps as early as Tuesday, February 11th. Members of the public who want to have their voices heard can contact members of the El Cajon City Council via email, phone, requesting to meet with them, or by speaking out at the next council meeting. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
11 people have applied to fill a vacancy on the Lemon Grove City Council, created when former council member Allison Snow won the mayoral election. The City Council will interview the applicants during the February 4th Council meeting. The Council has approved filling the vacancy via appointment to avoid a costly election. The appointee chosen will serve the remainder of the term, which expires in December 2026. The applicants, in alphabetical order, are Yadira Altamirano is a former Lemon Grove City Council member and small business owner. Her goals include reopening the rec center, getting more businesses to invest in Lemon Grove, assuring that new sales tax revenues are used for infrastructure and road repairs, and working to create a pedestrian-friendly and aesthetically improved downtown. Jay Bass is a retired Navy veteran who has served on the Lemon Grove School Board as commissioner of the city's planning commission and in numerous community organizations. His goals include assuring funds are spent responsibly, supporting local businesses, creating a business-friendly environment to foster growth, and instilling community pride. Kenneth Davies is a 25-year resident of Lemon Grove with a master's degree in computer programming. He wants to see roads repaired and preserve Lemon Grove's community character. Robert Holliday is a Lemon Grove native and licensed realtor. He served as chairman of the Lemon Grove Planning Commission when the city was incorporated, as well as president of the Lemon Grove Chamber of Commerce. His goals include improving Lemon Grove's image, being frugal with money, and seeking out new revenue sources. Meredith Levine is a law professor and licensed attorney with USD Legal Clinics, where she works to assist domestic violence victims. She has served as president of the Crime Victims Fund and was a founder of the San Diego Family Law Bar. She wants to fix roads, bring in new business, learn from diverse views, and come up with sensible, compassionate ways to address home businesses. Cody Littleton is an internet recruiter who has served as Vice President of Urban League Young Professionals and as a corporate liaison. He has training as a facilitator, including conflict resolution skills. He wants to foster meaningful community engagement and work to strengthen relationships with external organizations and boards. Oyuki Littleton is an office administrator, customer relations specialist, and 7-year resident of Lemon Grove. She voices concerns over the county's tiny homes project for the homeless and wants measures to assure that children and residents are safe. She also wants to repair and strengthen communication between residents and council members. Manola Clark Manson is Director of Workforce Development Healthcare for the San Diego Workforce Partnership, has a master's degree in psychology, and has served as Training and Development Director for the county's Health and Human Services Agency. She's also a Lemon Grove Planning Commissioner, involved in local service organizations, helping with Lemon Grove cleanup and food distributions. She wants to increase the city's resources, development through grants and new businesses, improve transparency and community involvement at council meetings. Robert Rael is a systems engineer and webmaster with a degree in film and media. He has lived in Lemon Grove for 15 years and was previously in Normal Heights, where he was involved in a business association, newspaper, and cultural council. His application lists one goal: to represent my peers, as well as pass information along to my peers. Seth Smith is an architect and chair of the Lemon Grove Planning Commission, involved in many local nonprofits, as well as Revitalize Broadway efforts in Lemon Grove. He wants to set up efficient systems for the city to use revenue from the newly passed ballot measure to repair and improve city infrastructure, implement policies to remove blight and diversify the types of businesses downtown, and encourage access to housing through general plan updates. James Stout has worked as a machinist and inspector. His community involvement includes serving on the board of directors at Faith Chapel and Life Point Church, teaching Bible study and serving as treasurer at Life Point Church. His goals include being an advocate for the people and helping the city become healthy and strong. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery with this week's Destination East County. February brings some favorite festivities and fun-filled events, including a Judy Collins concert, a stage production of Romeo and Juliet, romantic Valentine's teas, a Black History celebration, the Boots and Bowties Awards dinner, Fido Fest, and Hawkwatch. Award-winning singer-songwriter Judy Collins will perform at the Magnolia Performing Arts Center in El Cajon on February 12th. Her rendition of Joni Mitchell's Both Sides Now won entry into the Grammy Hall of Fame. And she won Song of the Year at the Grammys for her version of Send in the Clowns. She's also had many top 10 hits, gold and platinum selling albums. Recently, artists such as Dolly Parton, Joan Baez, and Leonard Cohen honored her legacy with the album Born to the Breed, a tribute to Judy Collins. For tickets to her concert, you can visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com. Julian Tea and Cottage Arts will host Valentine's Teas February 13th through 17th. This special set menu is a romantically inspired four-course experience, starting with soup, then finger sandwiches and savories, followed by a scone, jam, and whipped cream, plus a luscious dessert tray. Vegetarian, gluten-free, and children's options are available with advance notice. For reservations and details, visit juliantea.com. Romeo and Juliet will take stage at the Borrego Springs Performing Arts Center February 21st through 23rd. The Shakespeare classic tells the tale of an age-old vendetta between two powerful families that erupts into bloodshed when a young, love-struck Romeo falls in love with Juliet. For tickets, visit eastcountyarts.org. A Black History Empowerment Celebration will be held on February 22nd from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Lemon Grove Academy Middle School. Festivities will include spoken word, drumming, African dancers, music artists, soul food vendors, food trucks, and more. The City of Santee invites you to bring your dog for fun times at Fido Fest or adopt the furry companion from rescue groups.
This event will take place on Saturday, February 22nd from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Town Center Community Park East in Santee. Contests will be held for the biggest and smallest dogs, best costume, and best trick. There will also be ARFs and crafts, demonstrations, vendors, and giveaways. Dogs attending must be friendly with other dogs and people, comfortable in large groups, and up to date on vaccinations, and ready to have a good time exhibited by lots of tail wagging. For more information, you can visit cityofsanteeca.gov. The San Diego Regional East County Chamber of Commerce will celebrate its 113th annual East County Honors on Saturday, February 22nd at Squan Casino Resort at 5 p.m. This year's theme is Boots and Bow Ties. For over a century, the San Diego Regional East County Chamber of Commerce has held the tradition of swearing in the new Chamber Board of Directors and recognizing outstanding businesses, organizations, and community leaders in East County. For tickets to the event, you can visit business.eastcountychamber.org. You can view raptors and learn about birds of prey at Hawk Watch, hosted by the Wildlife Research Institute at the Beegent Ranch in Ramona, each Saturday in February starting at 10 a.m. If you can, bring binoculars, a folding chair, sturdy shoes, and a jacket. The event starts with an educational biologist talk, plus a question-and-answer session with falconry or ambassador raptors that you can see up close and personal. After that, you can opt to drive a 2-mile route on paved roads to observe wild raptors, including a bald eagle nest. Biologists and expert volunteers will help you spot and identify birds and view them through their high-powered professional telescopes. For more information, you can visit wildlife-research.org. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
We're going to pause for about a 5-minute news break with some national news from Public News Service, and then we'll be right back with more local East County news.
The Public News Service Monday afternoon update. I'm Mike Clifford. The fate of the U.S. Agency for International Development appeared bleak today after Elon Musk, the world's richest man charged with overhauling the federal government, said President Trump had signed off on shutting the agency down. That from CNN. They report, in Washington, USAID's headquarters were closed for the day. Employees told in an email to remain at home. Logos and photos of its aid work have been stripped from building walls, and its website and social media accounts have gone dark, replaced with a reduced version of its webpage on the State Department's website. Next to California, where school districts are working to reassure parents who may be scared to bring their kids to school, since the Trump administration made it clear that immigration authorities will no longer be discouraged from conducting raids in sensitive places such as schools, churches, and healthcare facilities.
Data show that 1 in 10 children in California has an undocumented parent. Laura Fisher with Desert Sands Unified School District, about 2.5 hours north of the border, says while the district does have to comply with a judicial subpoena, student safety comes first.
We'd be asking for the officer's credentials, contact information, the details of the request, and ask to see a copy of any reason for them being on the school grounds and any documentation that authorizes their school access before we would allow anything.
DSUSD recently sent home a letter to all parents reassuring them that the district has protocols in place and will protect the confidentiality of student data if ICE shows up. I'm Suzanne Potter.
And for Pennsylvanians with disabilities, there may be unexpected side effects to ending the so-called DEIA policies. Our Daniel Smith has more.
President Donald Trump has opted to eliminate diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility initiatives in federal agencies and federally funded programs. His executive order signed in January characterized DEIA policies as discriminatory. But in Pennsylvania, Mallory Hudson with Keystone Progress Education Fund says a memo went out ordering the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division to not file any new complaints, motions to intervene, agreed upon remand, amicus briefs or statements of interest.
and that includes ADA complaints. So that is one of the few ways that disabled people can even protect their civil rights.
Next, statistics show millions of Americans deal with mental health issues, but a recent study finds insurance companies often deny coverage for emotional illnesses based on questionable criteria. David Lloyd is with the mental health advocacy group Inseparable.
They often use non-transparent black box criteria that have been developed with the insurer's financial interest in mind and not the best interest of patients.
More than 150,000 people in Delaware have a diagnosed mental health condition, but less than half of them are approved for specialty care. He says insurers are required to provide mental and physical health services equally, but many are blocking access to necessary treatments. This is Public News Service.
An EPA rule finalized near the end of the Biden administration calls on states and cities to recall all lead pipes in drinking water systems within a decade. This work is taking shape in Minnesota, even with uncertainty looming. Mike Moen reports.
The federal rule was announced last fall, and prior to that, Minnesota laid out its goal of replacing all lead service lines by 2033. With the help of state and federal aid, Brent Marsalek with St. Paul Regional Water Services says his staff has gradually increased no-cost pipe replacements for property owners.
There are many residents that just simply could not afford the $7,000 to $10,000 to get a lead service line replaced in their private property.
The federal bipartisan infrastructure law emphasizes steering money toward disadvantaged areas. However, the Biden rule faces a legal challenge from a utility association, with questions lingering about the Trump administration possibly rescinding the changes.
The pandemic appears to continue to impact educational outcomes among Arkansas kids.
New data from the nation's report card show both fourth and eighth grade math and reading scores in the state have remained stagnant since 2019 and lower than the national average. Most Arkansas eighth grade test takers reported not receiving any math or reading tutoring. However, most also said they have access to social-emotional supports and rate their teachers positively. Peggy Carr with the National Center for Education Statistics adds that chronic absenteeism rates, which doubled during the pandemic, are dropping.
So some improvement, but not enough. And this wouldn't be so worrisome if we had not found a consistent and strong correlation between absenteeism and student performance. You have to come to school to learn.
Nearly one in three Arkansas test takers said they had missed three or more days of school in a month. Mary Sherman reporting.
As Ohio's private school voucher program nears $1 billion in funding, the Trump administration is pushing to expand school choice nationwide by redirecting federal money toward similar programs. The Ohio Department of Education and Workforce reports more than 3,000 students in Dayton City schools alone use one of the state programs meant to provide access to private, faith-based, or public charter schools. Educator and school board member Dan Hines is also on the Vouchers Hurt Ohio lawsuit steering committee. He says using public tax dollars to fund private institutions without sufficient oversight is inspiring school boards to join the lawsuit.
Ohio is a state where families earning $60,000 a year are subsidizing the private school tuition of families earning $300,000 a year.
Hines points to recent changes in eligibility requirements that no longer mandate that students previously attended a public school, a shift he says deepens educational inequalities, widening the opportunity gaps for students who need the most support. This is Farah Siddiqui for Public News Service, member and listener-supported, heard on interesting radio stations and your favorite podcast platform. You can find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is John Tidwell with a Crime Beat report. Sheriff's Deputy Jeremiah Flores has been charged with violating the civil rights of a man in pretrial custody at the San Diego Central Courthouse. Flores is accused of using excessive force that caused serious injuries, then writing a false report to cover up his actions. If convicted on both counts, he could face up to 30 years in prison and be fined up to $500,000, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office. Flores was assigned to the San Diego Central Courthouse on August 29, 2024. And was escorting the 57-year-old man, described in the indictment as JP, to a holding cell after a court hearing. JP's legs were chained and his hands were cross-chained to his waist. The indictment alleges that Flores forcefully shoved JP into the cell, causing JP to smash into the bench and walls and collapse to the ground. Flores failed to immediately report the incident to a supervisor or prepare an official report, both of which are violations of the San Diego Sheriff's Office's use of force policy. According to the indictment, another deputy found JP over 2 hours later, lying in the same position in his holding cell with a head wound and a pool of blood on the floor. As a result of Flores' actions, JP also suffered a spinal injury, the indictment states. He underwent surgery and remained hospitalized for months. The indictment said that more than an hour after JP was discovered in his holding cell, Flores falsely claimed in an incident report that no force was used in placing JP into the cell. Flores has been with the sheriff's office since November 2021. Sheriff Kelly Martinez issued this statement. The actions described in this case are unacceptable. Immediately upon hearing of the incident, an investigation was initiated, and Deputy Flores was placed on administrative assignment. The investigation led us to believe criminal actions occurred, and we presented the case to state and federal authorities. She adds, there is no excuse for any deputy to use excessive force, particularly in the case of someone who is vulnerable due to the circumstances of being in custody. Any sheriff's employee who violates the law or policy will be held accountable, the sheriff concludes. U.S. Attorney Tara McGrath says, the vast majority of law enforcement personnel are dedicated public servants committed to following the rule of law and protecting our communities. But she adds, when a choice is made to cross the line and violate someone's civil rights, this office will stand on behalf of the victim and all those who wear the badge with honor to uphold the public's trust. Flores made his initial appearance in federal court on January 31st before U.S. Magistrate Judge David D. Leshner. He entered pleas of not guilty to both charges and was released on a $25,000 personal appearance bond with special conditions that he surrender his passport and his firearms.
The San Diego County Superior Court has ordered the conditional release of a sexually violent predator, Gary Snavely, on Winola Road in Julian. Snavely was convicted of molesting two girls ages 8 and 9 in Orange County back in 1987. In 1996, he was convicted of failing to register as a sex offender in San Diego County and went back to prison. After his release, he was placed in Hacumba in 2008, but after he abused his psychotropic medication, failed to wear appropriate clothes in public view, and lied to his supervising staff, he went back to Coalinga State Hospital. Supervisor Bill Horn has called Snavely the worst of the worst, adding, no child or family should be forced to live in fear with Snavely as their neighbor. That was back when Snavely was proposed for release in Borrego Springs before the state withdrew that application and instead placed him in Hacumba Hot Springs. The public can submit comments on Snavely's proposed release in Julian between February 3rd and February 16th. You can email your comments regarding placement to sdsafe@sdsheriff.org or call 858-583-7238. Or you can ask the judge for permission to speak at Snavely's upcoming hearing. That's on March 7th at 9 a.m. before Judge Jeffrey Fisher in San Diego Superior Court. Reporting for East County Magazine from Julian, this is Miriam Raftery. Annette Smith of El Cajon has been arrested on suspicion of mailing a narcotic-laced greeting card into a San Diego County jail. In December, deputies assigned to the Sheriff's Mail Processing Center intercepted a greeting card intended for Alice Abungan, who was in custody at the Las Galinas Detention and Reentry Facility in Santee. Deputies noticed the card had the appearance of being soaked in narcotics. The Sheriff's Detention Investigations Unit began a criminal investigation which identified Smith as the one who mailed the greeting card containing the drugs. On January 29th, Sheriff's DIU detectives, along with deputies from the Lakeside Sheriff's Substation and Santee Sheriff's Community-Oriented Policing Team, served a search warrant at Ms. Smith's home in El Cajon. During the search, they found evidence related to the mail case and over 35 grams of methamphetamine, says Sergeant Aaron Brown. Smith was arrested on numerous charges, including sending a controlled substance into jail. That's a felony charge with a penalty of up to 6 years in custody. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
President Donald Trump's new executive order on California water policy is drawing criticism from many water conservation advocates. The order directs the feds to study ways to override state environmental protections and send more water from Northern California down south. But Bruce Resnick with the nonprofit LA Waterkeeper says the devastating fires can be blamed on extreme winds, dry brush, and local infrastructure issues, not on a lack of water. And he says Trump is taking advantage of a disaster to benefit corporate farms.
To the extent they're going to deliver more water, a lot of that is going to be going to big agriculture in the Central Valley and folks that have supported Trump.
Groups such as Restore the Delta say Trump's policies could harm the San Francisco Bay Delta ecosystems and devastate the salmon fishery. They also oppose Governor Gavin Newsom's Delta Conveyance Project, which the state says is intended to capture more water from large but infrequent storm events. Resnick says if the state and feds really want to make an impact, they would invest a lot more money into existing projects to clean up contaminated groundwater, improve conservation, and recycle more wastewater.
In LA County, we import about 700 million gallons of water a day, about the 1.2 billion gallons we use. We flush it, we treat it again, and then we dump 450 to 500 million gallons of that back into the ocean. The Metropolitan Water District, the county, and the city have plans that we could be reclaiming 330 million gallons a day.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
San Diego County Supervisor Jim Desmond announced that he will run for Congress in the 49th District, which is currently represented by Democratic Congressman Mike Levin. The conservative Republican supervisor represents District 5. He says he wants to restore common sense leadership. On immigration, Desmond calls for both securing the border, but also creating a legal immigration system that works, including an online application system so immigrants can apply legally. He also wants to streamline legal immigration for skilled workers, family reunifications, and humanitarian cases. On energy policy, he wants to expand nuclear power, carbon capture, and hydrogen energy. Of note, his district includes the site of former San Onofre nuclear generation stations, which were decommissioned due to a radiation leak. The 49th Congressional District straddles San Diego and Orange counties. Levin easily defeated his Republican opponent in both San Diego and Orange counties in the 2024 general election. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
After Donald Trump issued an executive order to suspend refugee resettlement, the Trump administration has canceled all flights for over 10,000 refugees who were already approved to resettle in the United States, according to Associated Press. This includes over 1,600 Afghans who helped America's military, as well as relatives of active duty U.S. military personnel, Reuters reports. The impacts hit hard here in San Diego County, which in recent years has resettled more refugees from around the world than any other county in the U.S., including refugees from Africa, Asia, war-torn Middle Eastern countries such as Iraq and Syria, Ukraine and other European nations, Haitian refugees fleeing natural disasters, and many more. The International Rescue Committee, or IRC, which helps to resettle vulnerable refugees, is urging the Trump administration to reverse this order. On its website, the IRC states, "This executive order is a step backwards for America." The Trump administration has also taken down entirely the State Department's page on the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program. The IRC warns, "If the program is not restored, political dissidents, religious minorities, and the most vulnerable victims of war and disaster will pay the price, and so will the United States." The 1980 Refugee Act established the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program, which has been managed by the U.S. government working with the United Nations Refugee Agency to identify, screen, and vet backgrounds of refugees for resettlement in the U.S. This has historically been a bipartisan effort that has significantly boosted the economy. Refugees have, in fact, contributed a net positive $124 billion to the U.S. economy between 2005 and 2019, the IRC site states, citing a Health and Human Services webpage. However, the Trump administration has since taken down that page. The Trump order claims the United States lacks the ability to absorb large numbers of migrants, and in particular refugees, into its communities in a manner that does not compromise the availability of resources for Americans, that protects their safety and security, and ensures the appropriate assimilation of refugees. This order suspends the USRAP until such time as the further entry into the United States of refugees aligns with the interests of the United States, the order concludes. The order cites no studies to support any of those statements. San Diego Navy veteran Sean Vandiver is president of Afghan EVAC. That's a coalition of veterans and advocates who have helped Afghans obtain permission to resettle in the U.S. after the fall of Kabul at the end of the war in Afghanistan in August 2021. The organization's policy goal states, after 20 years of war, the United States has an obligation to help relocate and resettle those who risked all to assist our forces on the battlefield. After the Trump order banning refugee flights, Vandiver told KPBS, veterans, advocates, Afghans are all freaking out, worried about the people that they love. He adds that the Afghan refugees include partner forces that stood alongside our U.S. forces, as well as family, children, babies that were separated during the withdrawal and after. It means lawyers, judges, and prosecutors who put the Taliban away, he concludes. Many of these refugees have been waiting for years in Pakistan, Jordan, Turkey, or other nearby nations before receiving permission finally to come to the U.S. If returned to their homeland in Afghanistan, they could face ostracization, mistreatment, or even death at the hands of the Taliban now in control. Other refugees remain in Afghanistan. Among those in limbo are the father, mother, and two brothers of Omid Shiraz, an Uber driver who came to the U.S. on a special immigrant visa 3 years ago and plans to move to La Mesa this month. The San Diego Union-Tribune reports that Shahzad's father was a general in the Afghanistan Army who served with American troops and had a Priority 1 visa under the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program to come here. Shahzad said of his family members now stranded in Afghanistan, they are sleeping with fear every night. Nuri Barka in El Cajon, founder of the Chaldean Community Council and an Iraqi immigrant, told the San Diego Union-Tribune that Trump's order could also affect Iraqis hoping to come to the U.S. A Trump supporter, he voiced hope that through negotiations the Trump administration may be persuaded to change its order. Barka says, I believe that we can make things happen if we approach it the right way. The Alliance for African Assistance in San Diego posted on Facebook, these harmful laws blocking refugee resettlement are a tragedy for America. Refugees have already enriched our economy and communities. Denying them the chance to contribute further undermines the values that built this nation. The Post notes that many famous people have come to the U.S. as refugees, including Albert Einstein and Madeleine Albright. Krishamara Vignaraja, head of Global Refugee, one of 10 U.S. resettlement agencies, notes that refugees are different than asylum seekers who come to the border. Refugees must be living outside the United States when they apply for resettlement, and they're typically referred by the United Nations to the U.S. State Department, unlike the undocumented immigrants, whom Trump has long vowed to target. Vignaraja says, refugees go through one of the most vigorous vetting processes in the world, and many are now seeing their travel canceled just days or even hours before they were set to begin their new lives in the United States. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice.
San Diego Metropolitan Transit System, or MTS, is increasing trolley service for the green, blue, and orange lines, offering additional late-night and weekend service to provide riders with more options to take public transit. The Green Line trolley will offer service every 15 minutes all day long, every day, between downtown San Diego and El Cajon until 11 p.m., with service to San Diego's popular entertainment destinations, such as Petco Park, Snapdragon Stadium, downtown San Diego, and shopping centers. The added weekend and late-night service will provide riders more flexibility when taking transit to special events. The UC San Diego Blue Line trolley has added after-dark options with 15-minute service after 9:30 p.m. every day between American Plaza and UTC. Riders can take the UC San Diego Blue Line to UTC, UCSD Central Campus, Old Town, and downtown San Diego, among others, making travel for work, school, and leisure more convenient. The Orange Line trolley has added frequency on weekend mornings. It now runs every 15 minutes through 7 p.m., offering trips between El Cajon and downtown San Diego, starting just before 5 a.m. at 4:48 a.m. The Orange Line provides service to the San Diego Superior Court, Civic Center, Lemon Grove, La Mesa, Grossmont Center, and more. Sharon Cooney, MTS Chief Executive Officer, says our goal is always to make transit more accessible and reliable and to continue to provide a better overall experience for our riders. We're excited to see more people ride transit to special events, work, and leisure activities alike, she says. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
This is Hayden Parsley, on the road in Hucumba Hot Springs for East County Magazine. You can take a trip into California's past at the Desert View Tower, a quirky and whimsical relic of the past that is still open to the public here in San Diego's East County. Located just off Interstate 8 at the Incapa exit, the tower is poised on a rocky overlook surrounded by desert on all sides. Built in the 1920s by Bert Vaughn, a real estate tycoon who owned much of Hucumba, this 70-foot watchtower has become a tourist attraction and a local landmark on the outskirts of the small town known as Hucumba Hot Springs. Originally built to commemorate the area's rough pre-highway history, the tower houses a small museum filled with artifacts and oddities of California's history, including our region's Native American, Spanish, and pioneer past. The top floor of the tower is an observation deck, with a coin-fed telescope that provides a breathtaking view of Imperial Valley and the Anza Borrego Desert, though now somewhat marred by a wind farm. In 1950, a gift shop was added around the base of the tower. The shop still operates today and is filled with an eclectic mix of items such as geodes, gems and minerals, vintage postcards, historic and travel books on our region, arts and crafts items such as handmade Tecate tiles, onyx bookends, musical instruments, carved animal sculptures, and more. Roaming this area of the tower are the owner's many friendly dogs that add to the rustic charm of the location. You can also get a workout pumping a player piano while listening to old-time tunes. While I was there, the wind was gusting. It was a bit chilly and I wished I had a better coat when I reached the top. The owner says this is atypical though and that it is warm and sunny most days. The proprietor, Ben Schultz, has many colorful stories on East County's history, culture, and colorful characters, having operated the site for many years. Boulder Park at the Desert View Tower was created in 1933 by an unemployed engineer, Merle Ratcliffe, who was out of work during the Great Depression. He sculpted reptiles and fanciful animals out of the huge stone boulders. I didn't get a chance to tour these, which will be an adventure for another time.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, A.K. Jewell, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.